Diesel back. He's in the hot tub. I'm
gonna be able to use it.
Our first county business is very valuable. United States Court of Appeals, Columbia, and give their attention for the court of master. God save the United States and all of the court. Be seated, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Beverly Dyer on behalf of Mark Weathers, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Weathers appeals the written judgment in this case, which involved two federal counts and three DC code counts. The district court imposed the federal counts consecutive to each other and imposed the DC code counts sentences concurrent to the federal counts. The district court did not impose the DC code counts or sentences consecutive to each other, and under 18 U.S.C. section 3584A, the statute provides that those sentences are concurrent. This sentence is not ambiguous. It is very much like the sentence that the Tenth Circuit ruled on.
Every time you use the word sentence, it begs the question, what is the sentence? I mean, when you use it unmodified.
The sentence, I would argue, is the oral sentence imposed when the judge and the defendant are face-to-face in the courtroom. And there are strong reasons that I think are explained in some detail that are persuasive and forceful about the defendant's right to be present at sentencing.
But it is accepted that the written sentence, the formal judgment, can clarify ambiguities in the oral sentence.
Well, the Tenth Circuit also describes a number of ambiguities and the types of sentences that would be ambiguous. And this is not one of those examples or any other. There's nothing ambiguous about the court's sentence. The court's silence is provided by statute.
There's nothing ambiguous before you bring Section 3584 into play.
Well,
that is to say, there's before the application of 3584, there is the question of consecutive or concurrent. Right? So that would sound to me like an ambiguity in the ordinary parlance.
However, district courts are well aware, I believe, of Section 3584, and it is incumbent on a district court to choose its words carefully when imposing sentence.
This seems to be, you're saying that the defendant should get a much shorter sentence because the trial judge wasn't as absolutely cautious as she should have been.
Well, I don't know for sure that this is a mistake, but even if it is a mistake, the district court...
Do you have any
court,
doubt?
I don't know what was in the district court's mind, and I think that there could be reasons why the district court would have imposed a sentence that was concurrent rather than consecutive. And those include...
It could have been, but they're not... It's hard to bring them into play in light of what happened on the record.
I think that this can be contrasted with the type of example where the district court says, let's say before imposing the sentence that the court actually imposed here, says, and I am going to impose, not I'm going to, the DC code sentences will be consecutive to each other, and then goes on to impose the sentence imposed.
But didn't the judge essentially do that when she said, I am going to impose the same sentence?
She did
that
impose.
I did. Right? I am going to impose the same sentence so that I did before, and under the previous sentence, these counts were, in fact, consecutive.
Well, saying what I'm going to do and explaining the sentence by saying the sentence is, such
well, but
as...
Well, these are just two, they're two sentences apart, right? I mean, she said that, and then she went ahead and described...
They're close together, and the court did impose the
and
same...
And this isn't a written judgment. It's her speaking orally.
She says orally, I am going to impose the same sentence I imposed before, but she did not speak to whether that sentence would be concurrent or consecutive.
Well, but if it was the sentence that she proposed before and that sentence was consecutive, doesn't that
That is correct. She still could have changed her mind. She could have not been referring.
In the one sentence between the time she said, I'm going to, and then when she...
She could not have been referring to the consecutive and concurrent parts of the sentence. She did impose the same maximum sentence on every count. The defendant did argue and demonstrate, I believe, a significant rehabilitation. He apologized. He took acceptance for these, he accepted responsibility for these offenses. I think even if the court made a mistake, however, let's say that we believe that it's very likely that the court made a mistake, if this court believes that, the court cannot later go back and correct a sentence imposed on the defendant to make it harsher. A court cannot.
Well, we couldn't, if this sentence weren't in there, I'm going to pose the same sentence that I did before. If that sentence weren't there, you'd have a much stronger case.
That's correct, but I think...
So it all turns on whether what we think about that sentence.
Well, I think that we would have a somewhat harder case. We would probably still be arguing this point. But if the court had said, had given the
Without
sentence...
Without that, you'd probably win, right? Because she specifically didn't talk about it.
Well, I'd like to contrast this with an example where the court gives a sentence that was imposed with silence on with respect to the D.C. Code sentences... concurrent or consecutive nature with respect to each other, and then goes on to say, in explaining the sentence, and the D.C. Code sentences were consecutive to each other, or are consecutive to each other. That would be a harder case for us. But that's not what was said here. Saying I am what I am going to do, and then going on to do something that is in part different, not completely different, I think...
Different in the sense that it's inexplicit.
I think one example...
It leaves, at least it would seem to me, the most that can be said about it is that it leaves blank something that the initial statement of intention fills in or gives a strong lead as to what will happen.
Even if that is the case, I think that this court has to uphold the sentence imposed when the defendant is standing in the courtroom. I think... that there are strong reasons why the defendant is required to be present at sentencing and permitted to allocute. There's a sense of fairness in the courtroom, and if the sentence imposed under a very clear federal statute is not ambiguous, then I don't think this court can go with what the district court said it was going to do generally. I think one example of the fact that the court may not have imposed the exact same sentence is that the court appeared to hesitate a bit before imposing these sentences, all of these sentences, consecutive to Mr. Weathers' superior court sentences for the cases and those cases. And some basis to think that that might have been a different aspect of the sentence, so that the court wasn't going to necessarily impose the exact same sentence in every respect. And I don't think that this court can read into that statement an exactly contrary reading of the concurrency and consecutive nature under 3584A. So I think the statute is clear and the actual sentence isn't clear. And the defendant has a right to be present at sentencing, and the court can't go back and correct that sentence later, and this court should not also do that, even if it were a mistake. I think with that, I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there are further questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
No.
May it please the court, Elizabeth Gabriel on behalf of the United States. This court should affirm the written judgment of the district court for two reasons. First, the district court made clear that it was imposing the same sentence it had originally imposed.
You agree if that sentence wasn't there, we would have a very different case, right?
This would be a very different case.
The defendant would be correct.
I would not go that far,
really?
Your Honor.
Why not?
Because the entire record makes clear what the district court...
But if she hadn't said that, it's very clear that in the rest of the transcript, she did not say that these three counts would run consecutively.
But if Your Honor looks at the entire sentencing transcript, at what the court said before it actually announced sentence, it's clear that the court considered the defendant's appellant's pleas for leniency and considered the change. I'm sorry.
Without that sentence, where would the defendant have known that those counts were consecutive?
Well, Your Honor, I think that if you look at what the court said in context.
Well, no, just answer my question.
Sure.
Show me where in the transcript she said something that would have put him on notice that those counts would run consecutively.
Well, there's nothing specifically.
Right. So the defendant would clearly be successful if were not for that sentence. So the whole, right?
I think the government would certainly have a much harder time.
Okay, so the whole thing turns on the sentence, I'm going to impose the same sentence, right?
Sure. That is the key to this case, uh-huh. Your Honor. And that's the court's oral pronouncement of sentence. Uh-huh. Here, it's not as if, as Your Honor's pointed out, it's not as if the court made that statement and then there was some intervening discussion. There was one sentence that separated that thought from the discussion of the actual terms of the sentence. And so it's clear that was the court's actual pronouncement of sentence in this case. Given that the court stated that it was imposing the original sentence and then proceeded to describe almost the exact terms of the sentence it had originally imposed, to argue that the court's inadvertent omission of mentioning that the D.C. code offenses would run consecutively, that was meant to be to make the sentence any different from the original sentence would be unreasonable in this case, given what the court's explanation of sentence was. Even if this court determines...
The next page, Judge Kessler says count five is to be served consecutive to count one.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think, and the court was
never
made aware.
Never sentenced him on count five.
Right. The court was made aware that was a mistake and that she had made a mistake.
Oh,
there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because
I didn't read the rest of it. Okay.
Sure. And so that's actually important. When you look at the court's pronouncement of sentence, the court was explaining how the sentences would run and then was interrupted when it was brought to her attention that she had made a mistake. And so it seems that from the context there that she simply had a, her omission was simply...
She picked up at the wrong point. She left out what she was going to say with respect to the consecutive 236 or something. Yeah.
Right, 2, 3, and 6. She had to go back and pick up where she left off and regain her train of thought. So it's not as if this is a case where the court simply omitted any mention here of how the sentences would run. Looking at the entire context, it's clear what the district court's oral sentence was. But even if this...
Your distinction of the Tenth Circuit case is that there isn't a remark like the remark here about her intent. There's no explicit words that create a conflict there.
Right. And in Villano, the Villano court itself recognized in footnote 7 that was not a case where the district court had simply failed to state whether the sentences would run concurrently or consecutively. The court's oral sentence made count 3 run consecutively to count 1, and the written judgment made it run consecutively to count 2. So there was a direct conflict there, and that's not what we have in this case. In this case, it's clear from both the court's oral pronouncement and the written judgment that the court was imposing a sentence of consecutive sentences on the D.C. code offenses. Even if the court should determine that there was some ambiguity in the district court's oral pronouncement, however, under Love, this court looks to the written judgment to clarify what the sentence is. And the written judgment is absolutely clear here that the sentences on counts 2, 3, and 6 run consecutively. And that's consistent with the court's statements at sentencing.
What was the total sentence then?
The total sentence, if the counts 2, 3, and 6 were to run consecutively, it would be a total of 440 months. If they're to run concurrently, it would be a total of 180 months. But the court...
440 months?
On counts 2, 3, and 6. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What about the total sentence?
The total sentence, counts 1 and 4 are 10 years and 5 years, respectively, and those are to run consecutively. And counts 2, 3, and 6 were to run concurrently with those sentences.
What I'm getting at, if the defendant is correct, the total sentence would have been what?
The total sentence would have been 15 years. I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I could do the math in my head this quickly. It would be 440 months running consecutively, concurrently with 15 years. I'd have to sit down and write that out. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
36 years.
That sounds about right.
I'm just wondering, there's a statement in the sentencing transcript where the judge says that the parole couldn't be granted earlier than 40 years.
I believe the judge was referring to the Superior Court cases, his sentences in the Superior Court cases.
Okay.
The discussion at sentencing was whether the sentences in this case would run concurrently or consecutively with the sentences in his Superior Court cases. That's right. In any event, we submit that the written judgment clarifies certainly what the court's intention was here. There's no conflict between the written judgment and the oral sentence, and we ask this court to affirm the written judgment. There are no further questions.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
No, I said thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Dyer, you have succeeded. You've accomplished something very few people here do, which is you've saved your entire rebuttal time.
I have very rarely done that in this.
Yes, I know. Congratulations.
And I don't know that I'm going to use it all either. I do think it is not the law that this court can determine an oral sentence from the context, as the government argues. That is not the way this court should interpret or hold that an oral sentence controls. I also would argue that Viano is quite close to this case because there the district court said count three will run consecutive to count one, but was silent on whether count three would run consecutively to count two. So it's not exactly a direct conflict. Count three, if it ran consecutively to count two, would also run consecutively to count one.
But isn't our decision in Love indicate a lot more flexibility than the Tenth Circuit?
Not with respect to Love addressed the.
I know the facts were different, but it talks about the written order clarifying.
But I think it also distinguished the case of conditions of supervised release, in which oral sentences are often somewhat vague, and so written orders are often somewhat more specific. And I think if the court looks at the actual instances of the differences between the order and the oral sentence and the written order there, it's quite distinguishable from this case, particularly given the statute in this case, which district courts are well aware of this statute. This is not an unusual statute for courts to apply. It has been in existence for more than a decade, or was even at the original sentencing of this case, and two decades now. So it's a statute that is applicable and applies, and courts are aware of it, and we would ask that the court hold the oral sentence. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted.